stronger. You will love God more, you will love me more. Come on, straight Jesus.
Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
You're listening to Life from the Path. My name is Ben Foost.
Hi, Ben.
The repenting double-minded man.
Self-proclaimed.
It's good to have you on tonight. Lots of good stuff going on the show tonight. Here's what we got happening. Boobo ran into some creepy 3 a.m. evangelism at the Perkins, and I want to hear about it.
Yes.
So we're going to see what's going on with that. We're going to do some secular versus Solomon. I give you a bit of wisdom, and you have to tell me whether it's a biblical bit of wisdom or whether it is of the world. Basically, can you tell the difference between pithy sayings from the world and genuine wisdom distributed by biblical figures?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you know the answer, so I'll give you the option, and you either tell me it's a secular, and if it's not biblical, you got to try to tell me the country of origin. Where did it come from?
I've played the game before.
Okay. All right. Secular Solomon.
I have two.
Well, I don't know why. Why are you talking to me and Boova like we're nobodies?
I can't look at anybody else. You just happen to be in my peripheral vision.
I'm sorry, Herrick. Learn the rules of the game.
Hey, I've played this before. This is for the three audience members out there that are listening.
That's fair.
No, that's solid. That's solid. So we'll do secular versus Solomon. I've got some Pope style advice on how to deal with your wife.
Yikes.
I'm gonna lay it on a line.
Thank you.
Here's how your wife can be dealt with.
Hey, Ben. Have you run this by Amanda?
Hey.
No.
Hold on.
Okay. Just wondering.
What if my wife is listening? Am I going to be in trouble
This is going to be straight up all right. I don't know how you conduct your affairs.
It's probably not right, though.
I'd be on guard.
I think that's a valid point. I think we can assume it's not right.
Dang it.
I know you're not at a sporting event, but some man protection might be applicable in this area.
Man, I should have brought flowers today. I knew it was the day.
All right, so we'll do that on Pope Style Advice. So we got some advice on Dear Live from the Path. But times are tough, Mike. People still need help.
Yeah, here's the deal. People look for a lot of answers, and here I'll tell you where they find them. They knock on door number one. You know what's behind door number one? Lies.
Yeah, dirty
That's
lies.
What's back there. People always try to solve problems with lies, and it's always a gamble, and it always turns out to be in the house's favor. And I'm not really sure. I haven't looked at the questions ahead of time, so we'll see what the establishment has come up with. But I'm fairly certain there's a lie involved, or somebody's too chicken to talk to somebody else. Those are generally the problems.
Yeah, fair enough. And we're going to kick off the show with a little discussion that I caught on Facebook, like 3 or 4 hours ago that people were having, and I thought this might be good, something for us to flesh out. So the basic nature of the question was, is it okay for Christians to have hobbies? Now, just for a little bit of context, it's basically the guy that asked the question is a board game man.
Sure.
And he likes playing board games. He was testing some from a friend. He basically has played 10 board games within the last, I don't know, 2 days.
That sounds like an addiction, Ben.
It's possible.
Okay.
It's possible. He might have a pretty compulsion.
Okay, that's okay. Fair.
So, but the basic nature, I think, is it okay for Christians to have hobbies? Can you serve God within those hobbies? Is it okay for Christians to be up to that stuff? What's your general thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. I don't. I'm not sure. There's a ton of discussion here. Actually, what I thought of, and maybe that's just coming from my perspective at the moment. It's totally fine for Christians to have hobbies. I feel like it's not probably fine for dads. depending on the age of your kids, I'm just not okay with that. That's kind of my
like
stance.
Any hobbies, or I mean, can you do that in a healthy way?
No, well, I'm sure that you can, but here's what I know from personal experience. I had hobbies prior to getting married and prior to having kids, and like my kids are 6 and 3, and I literally look at them and look at my wife, and I think those are going to be off the table for probably 10 years. They just are, and maybe that's unhealthy. You know, maybe it is. Healthy, I don't know, but I can look at it. I can look what the priorities of what I want to do with my family and with my kids, and I just can't slice you out the time. You know, repainting something, you know, like general upkeep's got to keep itself going. But like, you know, there's a million things that I said I was going to rebuild and I was going to do this and it was going to be a project of mine, and I thought, you know, I just can't siphon out the time. I just feel like it's not important. I mean, it will be. I'll have some time on my hands eventually. My kids will, you know, be getting busy doing stuff in high school and whatever. I think that'll be fine.
What if they don't cross? What if they cross over? I mean, doesn't it seem like you could have a hobby that involves your children?
Well,
take Board Game Man.
Yeah, but I feel like that's solid. I mean, it's spending quality time with the kids. I think that's okay. And so, like, and maybe it was just a personal conviction of mine, but I thought, I don't see any reason that Christians can't have hobbies. The Lord gave you the life as a gift. And, as long as your hobby isn't, I don't know, egging churches or something, I feel like you're probably all right.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it potentially just wasting time, though? Couldn't you be doing other things for the kingdom?
I don't know. It's between them and Jesus. What if Jesus said, hey, take a break, man? Here's half your rest right now.
I think you really have three levels. I think you've got you got to make sure you're loving God.
I'm sorry. What was level one?
This is going to be great.
Really going to write these down?
Yeah, I'm ready. Level
okay,
one.
So here's your not levels. You got filters. You got make sure you're spending time loving God.
Love God.
In your relationship with God, spending time.
What's that look like? That sounds pretty flowery to me.
Fine. You've got to make sure that you're spending time growing yourself, reading your Bible, in prayer with God, in prayer with your family, reading your Bible with your family. You've got to make sure you're active in your community to make sure that you're out there spending time with the people who
need
God.
That's a whole day already. I don't have the next two levels.
You're right.
But crap.
Here's the deal. The next piece, you've got to make sure you're loving on your family and spending the time you need with them. You should be spending time with your wife. You should be spending time being the spiritual leader of your wife and your kids. Those things come before anything you are doing. If you need to go do some carpentry in the garage, guess what? You need to be spending time with God.
Don't judge me from your chair.
You need to be spending time. You need to be spending time with God. You need to be spending time with your family.
I can pray why I put some carpet down.
You sure can, and I'm not saying you can't. The third thing is you are called to make sure that you are a leader in the community as well, making sure that you're...
Wasn't that in level one?
Yeah.
No, level one was your relationship. Okay.
This is specifically in the community, going out and discipling to people, talking about God to people, spending time caring for other people, caring for the widows, caring for the orphans, actually doing things actively for your community and in your church. If you've passed all three of those things and you feel like you fulfilled all three of those things enough and you have extra time, go do carpentry. Go build a birdhouse. Go work on your car, something like that. Fine. Make sure those first three things are not lacking in any way. And if you can intertwine those in any way, please do.
Yeah.
That's awesome to bring your kids into that. That's awesome to bring your wife into that. It's awesome to do that kind of stuff for your church. Those three things come first, then you.
Man, I don't have time to potty after what you just said.
You got to squeeze it in.
Wait a minute. Can you not engage your community through that hobby? I mean, can't all those things be interacted with?
That's what I'm saying.
With?
You can do that. Those things can intermingle. You can have your hobbies fulfilling those three callings that you have. But those things should not be ever at a detriment to your
hobbies.
Yeah,
like the Jesus rodeo. You know what I'm saying? People having the rodeo for Jesus and hula hooping.
Sure. If you're doing a rodeo to raise money for the kids in Haiti, whatever. If you're doing it with God's love, awesome. The whole thing is those three relationships should never be at a detriment for your hobby.
All right.
Agreed. Hobby would be a fourth priority then.
So let's say you get those three things done. I mean, is that's the full gamut after that?
Can you really ever get those three things done?
No, I don't think so.
So the answer's no, Booba. You can't have all that.
No, he was also saying you could weave them into those other issues.
What if your hobby's playing solitaire? You can't do that with everybody.
Yeah, you can play solitaire. Go to an old folks' home. Play some solitaire with them and talk to them about Jesus. I'm sure you can.
So here was the example I was thinking of as I was driving in. Was like what the fuck guy is like a whittler? He whittles figurines like on his porch with a knife.
Sure.
That guy's unbiblical?
No.
Why not?
Said that. Why is he not unbiblical?
How, sitting on his porch whittling a man out of a piece of wood, how is he hitting either of these three things?
I don't know, but do we know he's not?
No, that's what I'm asking.
He's by himself. He's not with his family. He's not
he
in the community.
He couldn't be sitting there in relationship with God?
Yeah.
He could be praying wise. What if he's not praying
then
while
is
he's whittling?
Else?
I'm sorry. Is this taking up so much time that he's not spending time with God? He's not spending time with his family.
Well,
time
here's the here's the reason. It's like it's kind of jokingly, ha ha ha. But here's the reason that it's important: is like you have absolutely nothing concrete to say to a man who's looking to live a life for Christ and has no idea what to do next, has no idea how to divvy up his time. Like let's get down to the brass tacks. When you say stuff like, "I need to, have a good relationship with Jesus Christ, spend time in prayer." And worship and reading my Bible and getting to know the God that I'm going to spend eternity with. Okay, check.
Yep.
I need to support my wife, love her, help raise my kids, and have an involved spiritual leadership in that home. And then I also need to disciple as I go. Okay, so as a guy, I look at that list and go, I have no idea how to do any of that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have, because let's say you spend so much time say, with the kids, your wife suffers. You spend so much time with your wife, you don't have time with the kids. You have so much time trying to be going out and missioning to the world that your family's left back in the winds.
Here's the deal.
Mike,
you're
describing someone who hasn't got that first priority in order.
Okay.
I mean, all the other things are going to fall out of balance if your priority with God is out of balance.
Because how?
Because otherwise we've got nothing to go off of. I mean, essentially God's the solid foundation that all the others have to rest upon. And so if all the others are falling out of balance, then there's a pretty good chance that there's something even more fundamental that's actually out of balance.
Okay, so what you're submitting then is the answer to, say, steps 2 and 3, as Boov has laid them out, is basically prayer. Lord, I need you to help me figure out where my time needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sounds fair.
Yeah. Is there a nature of, are there not creation around us, or even the concepts of, say, art and things like that, that God has given you to enjoy? I mean, should it
absolutely.
Be?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, so I guess I'm like, again, take the whittler, mm-hmm. and the painter.
Mm-hmm.
Don't check off that. You have to deal with the example. Right. You chose a man who's got a committed job and family and community around you. I'm presenting a man that doesn't necessarily fit into your sociological framework. You have to deal with him. Okay. Whittler,
okay.
or guy painting. Okay.
Excellent. So it's an artist of some kind.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay.
Right, so art is his hobby. He's probably got some other job. Maybe he's got a family.
He's retired. He paints.
Okay. Well, anyways, you can pursue your hobby and also pursue God at the same time.
Okay. But, I mean, for a couple hours on this Saturday, he's painting, and that's all he's doing. He's not praying. He's not shaking hands. He's not feeding the sick. Is it a problem?
I don't think so. I think you're never going to reach a point where you're 100% at all points in time going to be doing those three things. Mm-hmm. I think you've got to spend some time for yourself. Mm-hmm. Do I think
you didn't include that in your
that
step
was
list?
Not in the steps.
You're right. That is a perfect situation. If you are at all points in time spending time with God, discipling your family, and then taking care of the community, you're never going to have any time for anything if you were doing that 100% of the time. Is it possible to do that 100% of the time? I don't believe so. Obviously, you're going to have to work some time in there for yourself. I don't think that's a huge situation. I just want to make sure that if you can consciously say that what you're doing is a detriment to those three first relationships you should be having, then maybe you shouldn't be doing it.
Does it
now? If it's an hour or two, obviously I'm not trying to put a specific number on it. Maybe it's not really a detriment to those first three relationships. Maybe the guy is spending a lot of time in his relationship with God, and as he's discipling his kids and making sure that they're growing up in knowing God, and spending time with his wife and making sure that he's the spiritual leader of the home, and his outreach in his community. You know, is spending time with his church, is spending time growing with his church and growing people in the church. Does that mean that there's no time in his week for anything else? Not necessarily. I don't think that's always going to be a problem if he spends 2-3 hours on a Saturday painting or whatever amount of time. All I need you to make sure is, though, is that those three relationships are not suffering for your gain.
Mm-hmm. And
that's not a tangible number just to say. I can't say spend 15 minutes every Saturday whittling and then the rest of the time, Jim John, you better be in the church.
Why is he a Jim John? He's just a regular dude.
Oh, Jim John was the name I came up with.
He's a normal whittler.
Why is Jim John not a whittler's name?
Sir, I won't sell you this whittling knife.
Are you saying
two names?
People named Jim John can't whittle?
No, they're well-known whittlers.
They open up.
Then why are you arguing my Jim John?
I just feel it wasn't necessary.
You're ridiculous. And there's no, like I said, I don't have an amount just to throw on there saying, you know,
I didn't ask for an amount.
I'm making sure that I'm not
amount.
Putting an amount on there, though, okay. Because I don't think that'd be fair.
I didn't
fair.
Catch one. I didn't, like, point a
I
finger.
I said, like, 1 to 2
I
hours.
I presented
hours.
A scenario.
Okay, so okay. I just think that your main focus should be to make sure that you're spending time with those three relationships, and what you're doing by yourself is not a detriment to those three. If you're whittling and your kids are inside being yelled at by your wife and you're not spending time with them, guess what?
And a you murder should, is you happening should, across the street.
Guess what? You should probably be inside, Jim John. Seriously, get off your butt, stop whittling, and go take care of your wife and kids. If you haven't been Jeez. To church in 10 years because you spend every Sunday morning on your rocking chair that you made whittling.
Okay, hold on. Now you're painting
right,
the straw
an
man
addiction,
here.
Yeah, that is an addiction.
You're making the outrageous. That's the.
I am.
What was the answer? He asked, can a Christian man have a hobby?
Yes.
The answer is yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, cool. It's just in balance.
As long as his name is Jim John, he's whittling.
See, then there's not a murder happening.
And there's not a murder happening.
And your wife has gone
your wife
on your own kids. Man,
there's certain things that you have to make sure of.
I know you asked about this guy, but I'm going to paint a completely different man and describe him. Some kind of outrageous horned devil man who whittles in the night.
I care about Jim John. I just want to make sure his whittling does not become excessive.
Glow of burning bodies.
Jeez.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Go do your hobby. It's fine. It's fine. Here's what I would say. It's healthy. It's healthy for the consideration. It's healthy to think, am I spending my time wisely? I think we are remiss. We are ignoring a certain part of God's character if we look out on the landscape and on the world that he's created that he called good and said, we shall not enjoy those things because of the other, like the work that otherwise we feel called to do. Both are appropriate. And I think we have to be careful about regulating what God wants us to do by things that our society is willing to accept. For example, sometimes we consider Bible study to be a very it's a cognitive thing, but it's a I'm trying to think in our culture and in our day when the word study has a connotation to it, right? That's not a conversation with people around you. It's a me in a dark room with a candle and my Bible open, and that's the way it gets done.
I've never studied then.
No, you don't. No, not after that conversation. Your judgment upon Whittler has Jim shown John. Me that way. But there's connotations where if you Bible study looks different even in other parts of the world, then it's not wrong. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, I think we have to be careful how we look at that. I think hobby man's fine. I think go about your business. Enjoy the talents and the desires that God has given you. Look for opportunities. And frankly, here's what I think. I think God gives you those things, and you can use them for the first three things, for the levels of three. I think it's a way your passion gets passed on to your kids, and you get excited to teach them things, and you can teach things to other people, or you get introduced to other people that you can share Christ with. It creates opportunity. I wouldn't – sometimes we hitch too much on that. Sometimes I think – like, I'm just going to commit to this thing and wait for the opportunity to arise when there's tangible work to be done around me. But, like, I've chosen the me-centered way of doing it and hope that God would bless it. Mm-hmm. Dear Lord, I found this. Bless this so that I may keep doing it. That's foolish. But in balance, it's actually, I think it enhances the things that go on in levels 1, 2, 3.
No, I think I agree with Mr. Herrick that I think that's probably a continual prayer. In my life where I say, look, God, I mean, because the Lord knows how I like to spend my time, you know, and I say, generally I will pray and I say, look, I really like doing this, but, you know, don't let me get distracted by it. If it's not something that you're about, then, you know, I'll do something different, but I need you to convict me pretty hard because I'm entrenched here. I like it. So, you know, I need you to tell me where I need to be. And so I think number one bounces out 2 and 3. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. You're listening to Life from the Path. Hey, just, before we get moving any further, just a quick shout out to our sponsors, Life and Path is brought to you by the Eisenlauer team and Bob Eisenlauer. You can go to eisenlauerteam.com and they'll help you with all your real estate needs. Buying and selling a home does not have to be difficult and does not have to be stressful. You just have to have the right guy in your corner. That's Bob Eisenlauer. So you go to eisenlauerteam.com. You can there's a phone number there. You can get a hold of Bob or you can shoot him an email, set up an appointment. He's an awesome guy to deal with. I just love that guy. And as a matter of fact, maybe we'll have him in within the next couple months just so you can see his face. He's a handsome devil.
Who?
Bob Eisenlauer.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
People voted on it. Anyway, Bob Eisenlauer, EisenlauerTeam.com. Also, you go to Westfield Veterinary Hospital. That's right here in Johnston, Iowa. And you can go to WestfieldVetHospital.com. And if you you can set up an appointment online there, or you can give them a phone call. And they do full service pet. Your dogs, cats. I don't know if they do skunks. I haven't checked on anybody.
They probably do.
Yeah, it could be. Anyway, WestfieldVetHospital.com. Actually, I just had my dog in there recently. They did an excellent job. The dog is feeling much better. And actually, I don't think they did this, but they did something. The dog is not stealing the other dog's food. Before I took the dog to the vet, it was stealing the other dog's food. And when it came back, no problem.
So its demeanor was unhappy.
I think it's
now it's good.
It could be a coincidence.
Maybe they fed it?
Well, that's possible.
Okay.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll take a tooth.
Just as a souvenir?
Yeah, they'll threaten the dog. Look, you change your ways.
Daisy?
I'm going to keep this tooth.
You want to keep this tooth?
I can't argue with how they get things done.
And now, for America's fastest growing game show, Secular or Solomon?
Checking out the live show, you're really getting some tasty graphics. If not, you're just sitting in your car thinking, how did I get to the classic rock station? You've landed on Unproven, America's fastest growing internet game show, Secular versus Solomon. Here's the basic nature of the game. I will provide you a bit of wisdom, and you need to tell me whether that's a biblical bit of wisdom or whether it is from the world. If it's from the world, I want a country of origin. You got to know where your worldly wisdom is coming from. Ethiopians are pumping out false biblical wisdom left and right. You need to know about it. Anyway, you can play along at home. You can play along with the chat if you're hanging out on the website. And we'll see how you do on Secular versus Solomon. Everybody ready to go?
I'm ready.
Let's do this.
All right, here we go. Number one, Secular or Solomon. A man is not honest simply because he never had a chance to steal. A man is not honest simply because he never had a chance to steal. Secular or Solomon. Mike.
That's secular and Poland.
Poland. Dave Herrick.
Secular, Persia.
Persia.
Secular, Taiwanese.
I'm trying debating as to whether I can accept Persia as an answer.
It at one point in time.
Modern day Iran.
Iran.
Okay. Go ahead.
I already said secular Taiwanese.
I know, but I was listening to Dave Herrick. Secular Taiwanese? All right. A man is not honest simply because he never had a chance to steal. Secular Yiddish.
Oh.
Yiddish.
Wow.
I feel like you have to accept Persia then.
Yeah. That's not a country.
Yeah, I know. I didn't notice that until after I just looked at my answers.
You've never been to Yid?
I'm going to give half points. Everyone gets a half point.
All I'll right. consider mine a full point.
Since I'm twice your size, I consider mine too.
All right, here we go. Secular or Solomon, a rumor goes in one ear and out many mouths. A rumor goes in one ear and out many mouths. Secular or Solomon? Dave Herrick.
Secular. China.
China. John Buva.
Secular. Ireland.
Ireland. Mike.
I think I'm going to have to go secular as well, and probably Bolivia.
The Bolivians.
I don't know if you've ever
dirty,
had
dirty gossips.
Business dealings with Bolivians, but something to keep in mind.
A rumor goes in one ear and out many mouths, secular China. Dave Herrick
what?
Nailed it.
Wow.
Nailed like the it. Third time that's happened ever.
Do you spend a lot of your time studying the Chinese proverb system?
No.
Well, then it's just a gamble.
Herrick gets a lot of fortune cookies is the problem. He sits at home opening big boxes of fortune cookies.
No, I just heard many mouths, and I thought of the country with the most mouths.
I'm going to give you a half a point for your arrogance.
So that's I'm sorry. You don't
wait, you're rewarding
points.
My arrogance?
Yeah, it's a half a point deduction. I'm going to give myself
oh,
a
deduction. Okay.
I get a full point for spotting your arrogance. Moving, you're in the hole.
I was going to say, what do I get?
Hey, yeah. Listen here. Mike does not honor the point system. He does it. He's dealing out fake points.
Everything's fine. I'll give you the tally at the end.
All right. Secular or Solomon, like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. Like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. Secular or Solomon. John Buva.
We got fool and we got folly. Solomon.
Potentially falling for the trap. Mike Foost.
I'm going to go with secular and Guatemala.
Guatemala. Vomiting dogs in Guatemala.
That's totally Solomon.
Dave Herrick's in for Solomon. Like a dog that returns to his vomit is a Mike Foost who repeats his folly. That is Solomon.
Yes.
Solomon.
I'm gonna give myself a point for leadership. Buva, you get a negative one for bandwagoning.
I said something first.
Yeah, that's a real classic mistake. And Herrick gets a full point. Congratulations.
Secular versus Solomon.
Ridiculous.
Call on God, but row away from the rocks. Call on God, but row away from the rocks. Secular or Solomon. Mike.
I wish that Chris Tomlin was born somewhere else in here, because that sounds like something he'd come up with. I'm going to give that a secular and a Greenland.
Greenland. Dave Herrick.
Secular. I'm going to go Norway.
I feel a full point coming on for me.
call on God, but row away from the rocks, secular or Solomon. John Buva.
Row away from the fjords. I'm going to go secular Iceland.
Iceland.
What's with Scandinavia?
Seems right.
Okay.
Rowing.
Okay, I don't even got to wait. That's a negative one for a terrible description of your answer.
I'm sorry, you're easily swayed, Buva.
Yeah.
Another man who also likely got a wrong answer has influenced you to change yours to what is almost also likely a wrong answer.
No, I was thinking secular the entire time. I just wasn't thinking Iceland.
You were torn between
Greenland
and
Finland.
Call on God, but row away from the rocks. Secular India.
India. That's
India.
That's close to Iceland.
That's a plus one for me. Herrick, that's a zero. He's just right on the edge of being right.
I can't wait to hear what I got.
Boom, that's a negative one.
Any specific reasoning for the negative one?
I don't know. I just feel like you didn't earn it.
Just kind of felt like it, huh?
Yeah. Question five.
Secular versus Solomon. I give you a proverb. You tell me whether it's a biblical bit of wisdom or a secular bit of wisdom, whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and a stone will come back on him who starts it rolling. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and a stone will come back on him who starts it rolling. Secular or Solomon? Dave Herrick.
I'm going to go secular. Let me pick a country. Sounds almost like Confucius. So I'm going to go China again.
Watch for falling rocks in China. John Buva.
I'm going to go secular. Brazil.
Brazil, Mike. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and a stone will come back on him who starts it rolling.
I smelled Solomon when you opened the can.
Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and a stone will come back on him who starts it rolling. It is indeed Solomon. Proverbs 26:27.
That's plus 2 points.
Why is that plus 2 points for you?
A, the Lord's word is important. And B, I nailed it.
Wow. All right.
Eric, that's a zero. You almost had it, buddy. I mean, I was impressed. Boova, that's a negative one.
Reasoning?
I mean, it's the Bible. You have to open it every once in a while and take in the Lord's word. What hobby do you have that's blocking your Bible time?
Whittling.
Yeah. That's a negative two for being snarky.
Secular. Or Solomon, give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. Teach him to fish and he'll eat forever. Secular or Solomon. John Buva.
I've heard that so many times. I'm going to go secular. Saudi Arabia.
Buva has heard it so many times because it probably isn't in the Bible. Mike Fuster.
Knew you were going to go there with that, but...
Give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. Teach him how to fish and he'll eat forever.
I'm going with secular and South America. South Africa. South Africa.
You're either choosing a continent or a country.
South Africa is a country located within the continent of South Africa.
Yeah, that works.
All right.
It's the continent of Africa.
Dave Herrick.
I'm going to stay in China.
Secular China?
Secular China.
Give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. Teach him how to fish and he'll eat forever. Boy, you've got to get some fortune cookies rolling to be like Dave Herrick, who got it. Secular China.
What?
Wow. Nice job, Herrick. Yep. I'll give you a 0 points on that one. I mean, it was really close to being impressive. Me and Boova both guessed countries with the initials S.A., but mine was closer to China, so that's a plus one for me.
Okay, Mike, in all the times that you've played this, has anyone ever guessed the country right twice?
Okay, that's a negative one. Self-righteous, Herrick. You want to keep running it?
Did you just say that?
Move, I'm not self-righteous. I'm just right.
South Africa is closer to China than Saudi Arabia.
That's negative two for questioning me. One, two, three, four.
Saudi Arabia is closer.
I'm barely in the lead here. It's a close game. Go ahead, Vince. Seven.
Herrick wears his humility like a crown of emeralds.
With a hired spotlight man.
If you can't see how humble I am right now.
Let me ask you this. In the history of this game, has anyone been as great as me? Has anyone? Name a man.
Can you name one person that's better than me?
No, I'm just asking you to justify the zero.
Well, I believe that I did.
I feel like
now, if you have a problem with it, you can submit to our appeals council. And cool.
Hey, appeals council.
Exactly. Appeals council's here.
I have the only working pin at the table.
He's got a valid point.
Good point.
Negative points for you guys. Go ahead, Ben.
All right.
Question seven.
Secular or
next
Solomon?
Question.
Please return my notebook to me.
If one turns away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer is an abomination. If one turns away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer is an abomination. Secular or Solomon? Mike Fuster.
I feel like it's a giveaway. If Juan turns away his ear, that's got to be South America, so Guatemala.
Dare.
Secular.
I'm going to go Solomon.
Solomon. John Buva.
Yeah, I'm in for Solomon.
If one turns away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer is an abomination, that is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 28:9.
What?
If Juan?
Okay, the big clue
is in J-U-A-N.
He mentioned the law.
There's law in Guatemala. That's a point for me.
Obviously, you've never been to Guatemala in the evening hours. There is indeed no law in Guatemala. That's how all those avocados get out of the country.
Okay, I'll give you guys each a point.
All right, secular or Solomon.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
I'm benevolent.
In baiting a mouse trap with cheese, always leave room for the mouse. In baiting a mouse trap with cheese, always leave room for the mouse. Secular or Solomon. Dave Herrick.
Secular France.
Nice.
John Buva.
Secular Italy.
Sticking with the Western Europe, Mike.
Secular and China.
In baiting a mousetrap with cheese, always leave room for the mouse. It is indeed secular. Greece
for the win.
Greece.
That's a point.
You've been playing America's fastest growing internet game show, Secular versus Solomon. We are on the last one. Please identify whether this bit of wisdom is of the secular nature or is a biblical bit of wisdom. Here we go. For pressing milk produces curds. Pressing the nose produces blood, and pressing anger produces strife.
Wow.
For pressing milk produces curds, pressing the nose produces blood, and pressing anger produces low voice strife. Secular or Solomon, John Buba.
Go secular, Egypt.
Egypt. Trouble in Egypt. Mike.
Secular Russia.
Curds and blood. Dave Herrick.
Secular Germany.
For pressing milk produces curds, pressing the nose produces blood, and pressing anger produces strife. And if you press your Bible long enough, you'll squeeze out Proverbs 30:33 with that bit of wisdom. And the lack of biblical knowledge is thick in here. I'm having trouble breathing.
Oh, man. I barely came out with a point on that one.
Mike, what were the sum totals?
Final tally, I had 13. Herrick had 7, and Buba was -4.
All right.
Buba, you're really stinking this game.
Yeah, I'm really awful. Somehow I keep answering them so wrong it's in the negative.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, can't explain it myself.
That's your rationale? Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. You're awful at this, Buba. I don't
maybe
know why
you
just are.
You should whittle yourself the Book of Proverbs.
Apparently so.
All right, that was Secular versus Solomon. You can catch that and many more past games from Life in the Path by going to lifeinthepath.org during the week. There's a special section for games. We played Secular versus Solomon with the likes of Chandra Knutschen, Righteous Vendetta, and many others. You can also play the End of the World as We Know It and Things Heard on Christian Radio to Raise Money. All available on Life in the Path.
$1,000 at the apostle level.
Wait, what is that? Is that a picture of you being victorious?
Yeah, I just wanted to keep it for the annals of history.
Okay, there it is, yeah. Why are you wearing mittens?
It's cold out.
And
it's
galoshes?
It's cold and lonely is the winter.
Your feet look like olives.
Yeah.
All right, so here's Pope-style advice. So the basic nature of Pope-style advice is someone has mistaken me for the Pope. I go outside to fetch the morning paper, let the dog out, and I look out, and there are, hordes of people, hundreds of thousands out of
hundreds of thousands, huh? Wow.
And they've been waiting all night at the St. Ben's Basilica. And they say, I need, and they're waiting for me to come out onto my porch and give a bit of advice. Now, I'm obviously not the Pope, and I don't normally do this, but I have my robe on, and I got a hat, and I fashioned my hair in such a way that they'll mistake me for the Pope. So I come out onto the balcony. I have to give them something.
Which way did you fashion your hair?
In a coif. I've coiffed
it. I didn't realize there was a specific Pope hairstyle.
I licked my palm, and I stroked forward.
I coif in the morning. So anyway, I have to give them some sort of wisdom. It has to be applicable for my own life to get them to leave my lawn. All right? So I've been thinking a lot this week, and I don't know why all these thoughts kind of converged together. This may say something either very poor about me or very good. I'm not sure which one it is, but it's centered around how I think about honoring my wife. And there's just been some things that I've been praying on, and I'm open to over applying this verse. I'm not necessarily saying that I know that this is the case, but it was something that was kind of been on my mind. But reading through 1 Peter 3:7 says, "Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." And there's just been things that I've been praying about, and I thought I'm not getting a good vibe here as to which direction to go on some things. And I thought, is it possible that my prayers are being hindered because I'm not honoring my wife in the way that I should? Now, it could very well be that it's not to like the fullest extent where I'm dishonoring my wife, but it just got me thinking about whether I honor my wife. And and one of the situations that I personally have seen incorrectly is when we met, I was a follower of Christ, and my wife was not. And through our relationship, she was introduced to Jesus, became a follower of Christ, and then we obviously got married after that. And but I think from that perspective, in leading my wife in her relationship with Christ, sometimes I lead without listening to my wife, as if I am the qualified listener of Jesus, because I was in the leadership role there. I'm the one that kind of introduced her to Christ, okay? And so I think that has been one way in which perhaps I am not honoring my wife as a fellow Christ follower, whose prayer life, to be honest with you, is probably stronger than mine. And so these are just things that are kind of flying around in my head on, am I actually honoring my wife? And not just like, am I treating her okay? But like, am I showing honor to my wife as an heir with me in the grace of life? Not just is she is my responsibility to point to Christ. Just like my kids, I think my kids fall in the same thing, right? At some point, as the leader, as a spiritual leader in my home, that doesn't mean that like I have to be make sure I'm listening to the people that I'm leading, right? It doesn't disqualify them from hearing from Christ. It doesn't disqualify God using them or using their discernment and wisdom in the life of my family. And I can't specifically point to something where I feel like I wasn't doing that, where I was ignoring things that they were saying. But I'm just something that's been kind of floating around in my head that I'm wanting to run my interactions with my not only my wife but my kids as well, my family, through that filter of like, am I showing honor to my wife? Am I respecting her prayer life as an example, right? If I'm praying on something and she's praying on something and I feel like I've got something, and she's not committed, am I likely to wait? Or am I likely to be like, well, I feel like this is the way to do it. This is what's going to happen. That's not leadership, because God has provided a spiritual, committed, loving asset as in a relationship with me, a beautiful blessing into my life, not to be ignored, not to just be always led like leash style. And again, like I don't want to make myself sound really bad. I'm not sure I'm actually doing all of that, but there's probably shades of it in my life and in my relationship with my wife. So I think my Pope style advice is you know, you can get the concept of where it says show honor to the woman, but like, are you actually doing that? And sometimes when we say show honor, we think the manly thing, the masculine thing is protect, lead, guide, but those things involve things like listening, and being close to and respecting as other people. As other worshipers and followers of Christ that God will use in unique ways, perhaps to also lead me through those circumstances. And so maybe it's just open your eyes and maybe expand your vision of what honoring your wife is. Maybe expand your vision of what leading your family looks like. It's not, if you think of it primarily as a responsibility, you will enact it as primarily responsibility. And I think you'll lose the relationship aspect of not just people that you are leading and caring for, but other Christ followers that are in your family. And there is beautiful depth to that on what God can do to you as a leader of your house through the people that you otherwise spiritually leading. And so that's my Pope style advice. Expand how you think about honor, expand how you think about leadership and spiritual direction and being a guide to your family, and just make sure that you're not running your family over to drag them to the place that you want them to go. Pope's advice. Get off my lawn.
You know, that's I don't know. That's a hard. It's not as easy as it sounds. You know what I'm saying? Like, there is a lot of good Christian fellas I know that run into that exact gray area, and usually it's because it's like an elastic cord. You know what I'm saying? Like they will let go of the spiritual leadership for so long that they've gotten so far away that when they shoot back, they way overdo it. And like, it's this perpetual, I'm doing too much, I'm doing too little, I'm doing too much, I'm doing too little. And it's a hard fight for them. I'm not going to say that I'm not victim to that as well. And it's actually funny because, like the stuff that you're saying, I notice it in the smallest ways, but like it comes out most when I speak to the dogs. Because here's the deal, like I have a very unrighteous anger towards my animals, and not like in a violent, you know, terrible way, but like I have a very short temper with them, and the reason is it gets passed on a little bit to other members in my family, because I get into the mindset where I'm like, you don't realize what I'm responsible for. When I say something needs to happen, it needs to happen right now, and I don't know what you're doing and why it's taking so long. And it becomes like it starts to lose all of its patience and all of its love and all of its intent. Yeah. And it starts to be a black and white, we're running an operation here. This place needs to look spiritually shipshape. When I say it's time to pray, I don't want to see you run around. I don't want to see you do a somersault one more time. I said it's prayer time. Now let's do this thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And yeah. You know, God will convict me of the. It's me every once in a while. It just is, right? Like, you know, if we're being honest, it is. It's just me. I tend to bail on that side, and it is really embarrassing, and it breaks my heart later when I think about it. And I'm so sorry that's the way it went down. But like, the stuff that you're saying, I don't know, it resonates for some reason, you know, as something to keep in mind of like, you know, sometimes we get caught up in Bible translations when we talk about, well, what was the original Greek? You know, what did that word mean? Blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? And like a lot of the connotations that we get in the Western world, we get from our use of that language as well, right? Like people argue over different translations of the Bible. Well, that doesn't change the connotation of whatever word they choose to go with, you know? And so like, some of the things, some of that language in Peter is very strong, you know, leadership. I can't put up with a whole lot of gruff. I'm responsible. The buck stops here. Here's the deal. And I don't want a whole lot of mingling and intertalking here because you know that I have to shoulder this, so let's just do it my way.
Yeah.
I'll take the lumps or I'll take the praises, whatever. And, like, that really is a really poor way to run your family. And I don't know. I really appreciate that Pope's tall advice. Dave Herrick?
I just had a question about the tail end of that verse. Mental disconnect between... I see the loving and the honoring of your wife and just submitting to her, or like a weaker vessel, it mentions, and that she's a co-heir with you in life of grace. But it's that last phrase, that so that your prayers may not be hindered, that really catches me off guard. It's like, how would that affect my prayers? The way in which I lead my wife, how does that affect my prayers? And is God more receptive to my prayers if my marriage and my family are all, you know, trucking in on a good track, or is he less? I'm just wondering if you guys had any thoughts on that one.
How tangibly or intangibly, how are the prayers actually hindered?
Yeah, apparently in Peter's mind, there was a very direct connection in some way, shape, or form, and I guess I'm just not seeing that at the moment.
I mean, is it more of I suppose that's the question. We talked a little bit about this last week. Like the verse can't say, like that portion of the Bible can't say more to us than it did to him. Like, because the first thing I would think of would be like, is God just revealing something about his character in this? Not to say that it's not true, but like, is he revealing something about his character and the way that he looks at marriage and maybe the intensity of which he looks at marriage and says, look, if you're making oaths, you're making covenants here. You made a covenant with me, I made a covenant with you, you made a covenant with your wife made a covenant with you, and you both made that covenant with me. And this is what I think. And if you're not going to keep that covenant, then, you know, maybe you're not much of a covenant keeper. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of out on a limb here. But I feel like there's, like, God puts a very... kind of almost like Bouva's stages of whittling here, but like he puts the funnel in. He says, I need your relationship with me, your kingdom head and your kingdom lens to be top priority, followed by your wife, followed by your kids, followed by your job, followed by everything else, right? But I need it in that order. I need it succinct, and I need it to be working in that way. And if you're not willing to do, because God asks, we talk about that a lot too, is that the end game is not the point. It's the details. It's the ways. It's the means that he's worried about. And part of the means is that you made a covenant with somebody, and he wants to see it kept because you made it in his name. And yeah. So if you're not even willing to do that, you know, maybe that's not put your heart in the right place for your prayers to be receptive to him anyway.
Yeah, and I wonder if it has a little bit of a flavor of like if you're talking about from Matthew 6, for if you forgive other people when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. Now it's not a sinful item, but like it's a
why would God listen to you if you're not listening to your wife?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think it's got a hint of that when you're almost mirroring a relationship there on how God is it's a submission to authority thing. That's kind of the context of 1 Peter in chapters 2 and 3. And I think that's what it is. I think it's giving you a flavor of that and say your prayers are hindered because look at what you're doing on that the submission to authority on your level, and it's a picture of basically what God's looking at with you and him.
If that's the case, then it makes it really interesting because he's kind of painting a picture of a husband who is sitting down and listening to and he mentions understanding way. Have an understanding way with your wife.
Yeah.
And show honor to her. And if it mirrors our relationship to God, then it means that God is in the same way living with us in an understanding way.
Uh-huh.
The same way that the husband is supposed to approach his wife.
Yeah.
Kind of listening to her.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then how much of God's will is he willing to kind of put on pause and hold and say, all right, let's get on the same page of this. Instead of God just running roughshod over us, he's actually sitting down in our prayer lives and saying, let's get together on this.
And it seems like a pretty, strict example, but like, look at, even when the nation of Israel was rebelling, when Moses was getting the Ten Commandments, and he asked him to relent.
Right.
I mean, that God could have just as easily just said, this is done, mm-hmm. and run, and, you know, and exacted judgment. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of in that way. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a strict example, I think, but like, I think similarly, it does have that picture of God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There have been guys who have been able to negotiate with God, and God listened to them.
Yeah.
And these were leader guys. I mean, these were like Abraham and Moses and guys like that. And God changed his mind because of some kind of influence that they had.
Right.
So maybe it's because of the way that they were a leader and they listened to the people around them.
Yeah. Which I think comes back to kind of where I'm sitting is sometimes I look at my responsibility as a spiritual leader in my house, and I sometimes think of it differently from honoring my wife and treating her in an understanding way, when those two things are the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing, and it's not intentional, but there are times when I will catch myself doing that, and to that extent, I think sometimes my prayers are indeed hindered because I'm not looking at the right relationships within my life in the correct way, and that is hindering my what I understand of God and how he interacts in my relationship with him. Mm-hmm. So
this conversation is getting more and more convicting.
What are you thinking, Mike?
I feel like I got some stuff to talk about. That's why.
All right. Bring it on.
I think I was thinking when they were talking about the prayers being hindered is it's not necessarily clear that God is hindering them. Like you're hindering them. You know what I'm saying? Like it could actually be the way God could be like, Hey, I don't want to hear this. What's going on now? Or, you know, like you literally cannot pray correctly. You literally cannot have that conversation with God when you're acting opposite of the way that he's asked.
Like you're just so full of yourself that God realizes you're just full of yourself.
I just, you know, you're literally not talking to me right now. You're talking, you know, about yourself, for yourself. You're not talking about kingdom. You're not talking about love for your wife. You're not talking about that. So your prayer life is hindered because of that.
Right. And maybe it's not even specifically what you're praying about, but it's how you're approaching the conversation, right? Like you see God as one thing. As opposed to what he really is, right? Like you're using him as it'd be the same as using him as a cosmic genie or like any other ways that someone can treat God or as a dumping ground. Mm-hmm. When like that same relationship that you might have in conversing between a husband and wife, you know, that's a picture of how you and God also can be interacting. Mm-hmm. And but your prayers are hindered because you're not seeing him that way. Mm-hmm. You've locked him in a bully bucket or you've locked him in the genie bucket. Mm-hmm. And either way, with those relationships not being right, how you see God is also incorrect, and ultimately your prayers are hindered because of it.
Yeah,
I could see that.
Yeah,
I could see blockage too. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that the way it's written rules out just straight up blockage.
I'm not listening. Nope. I don't have time for this, sir.
Troy, do you have any single guy take on this?
Yeah,
I'm sitting here listening to this, and it scares me. Hmm. It really does because I. A lot of the stuff that I get from this show, to be 100% honest, is learning from people, from you guys that are in relationships and in marriages with wives. I'm trying to learn how a biblical man acts in a marriage. And I don't have anything specifically when it comes to being single, like, you know, maybe this is what we should do with it, maybe this is what we should do with it. But I think the ultimate thing is it's really drawing the large importance of the honoring relationship, pushing the concepts of is it really blocking the prayer or are you praying incorrectly at this point in time? I'm not so much drawing from that. I'm more drawing from the fact that God is making this such a big deal. It is such a large thing to be honoring and respectful in your relationship with your wife. And it is, like Mike said, it's a covenant that you've made with God for you and another person's relationship. And from a single guy, what I can take from that is making sure that at all points in time, when I do and if I ever do get into a marriage relationship, that this is my number one priority in that relationship is I'm the spiritual leader to that person, and I need to make sure at all points in time that our relationship points directly to God. But at the same point in time, our interpersonal relationship, the relationship that I should have with my wife, should always be honoring and should always be completely God-centered, but also as much as I can centered on her as well.
All right. I agree. You listen to Live from the Path, and that was Pope style advice. And I hope you leave. But
hundreds of thousands of people have left your lawn.
It's going to take a long time. The Kaibos go back at noon. It's time to get out. Booba, we got like 5 minutes. Do you have time for your?
I do. Okay, I do indeed.
Hit me with
it. So this weekend, I was hanging out with some friends, and we were having a bonfire, and then we all decided about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, we were going to go to Perkins. We were all hungry and wanted pancakes. So we go there and we're having a good time. We're obviously, they were all loud and rowdy, and I'm just naturally loud and rowdy and stuff like that. So we were having a fun time, and the table behind us, there's two gals, and one gal comes up to our entire group, and I was laughing with the waiter, and I asked the waiter what the switch on the ceiling was for. There was a light switch on the ceiling, and she says, oh, that's for, it was a smoke eater. When this used to be a smoking section. I said, okay, perfect. The gal behind us says, yeah, that's for the bomb to go off. And just kind of does a creepy laugh and then sits back down. No issue. 2 minutes later, after we've all completely forgotten about it, she stands up and says, so, let's say that is a bomb. That bomb goes off? Are you going to heaven or are you going to hell?
Oh, no.
And I'm speechless, stunned. I'm staring at my friends who are all completely uncomfortably quiet. And we're all looking at each other. And I go, well, I think I'm going to heaven. And she goes, oh, yeah? How come? And I'm like,
wow,
man, that is harsh. I'm like, this is completely unexpected. And I said, well, because I truly believe that Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior, and I have completely accepted that. I've been baptized, and I live my life hopefully in trying to be according to the way that he wants as my God, and I do everything I can to be following his will. And she goes, that's a good answer. How about all you kids?
Oh, no.
And then looks at the rest of them, and I'm just like, man. I'm creeped out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a Christ follower, and I fully believe in what she's saying. Like, I am fully on board with at least what she's saying at this point in time.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's something we're going to disagree with along the ways, but I get where she's coming from. And she ends up just having a conversation, and everyone's uncomfortable. Well, I'm not really religious, and well, I don't know if I believe in God, and all this different stuff. And she keeps looking back to me, like, well, what are you doing? It's like, man. Like, I don't know if I should be convicted right now, or like, what I'm feeling. And here's you know, my biggest deal is I felt like, and by the way, one of the creepiest things she said was, she asked one of my friends who said, well, I'm not really religious. She looks at her and says, well, can we pray real quick? And I'm like, heck yeah. I like your style. That's cool. Like, I'm all for that. Let's pray, seriously. And then my friend goes, no, well, I'm not really a big prayer. And she goes, well, can I pray for you then? I'm like, that's right. You keep pushing that. Great job. That's awesome. And then she makes it creepy. And she goes, well, you're going to go to the bathroom at some point in time, aren't you? Let's just go pray in there. And I'm just like,
whoa.
Whoa.
Disconnect.
Yeah, exactly. We just went from, heck yeah, keep pushing that. Yeah, pray. Keep doing it. To, whoa, you put that down now. Like, that is not cool. And it really kind of convicted me in a couple ways, because it made me think, how am I being bold like that? How am I honestly standing up and not caring whatsoever what anyone's thinking about me and honestly looking at someone in the face, no matter who they are, and asking about the relationship with Christ? How am I doing that in my life? I don't know if I'm going to do it the same way. I think asking to pray in the bathroom is a little creepy, but whatever. You know, I think her heart was in the right place, which is a good thing. I also took from it, how can I stray away from being so, not necessarily bold, but careless about my discipling and my gospel, that I make people uncomfortable and just drive them away? Not from the standpoint of I'm making them uncomfortable because they don't believe in God or they don't have a relationship, but making them uncomfortable to the point that I'm doing nothing to further the kingdom of God but throw words at them and creep them out with concepts.
I think there's more to be said here. We're going to have to pick it up after the break.
All right.
All right. If you're listening to 99.3 KTA, we've got to let you go. You can listen to more at livefromthepath.org. Check out the podcast. If you're listening online, we'll be right back with you. Thank you for listening to Live from the Path. Hey, I'm going to leave you with a little Jesse Anderson. I told you she had a new CD coming out. This is one song that she recorded while on Live from the Path. It's on her new CD. It's called Hold. Go to jesseanderson.com. and we'll be right back with you. You'll still have time.
One look in your eyes, I was mesmerized right there and then. Suddenly realized just how much I've been missing.
Understood.
That's Jess Anderson. Caught Me by Surprise. You can find it on the album Hole, available at jessanderson.com. I really love this song, by the way. That was really good. They did a great job with that. All right, so just before the break, Boova had a 3 a.m. interaction with some evangelists, and they were bold on truth, but a little bit creepy. And you left us with two questions. The first one was, how can I be more bold?
Mm-hmm.
And two, how can I be more bold without creeping people out?
Right.
Does that sound like I got your questions correctly?
That's exactly right.
All
right.
So any thoughts on the basic nature of the story, fellas? Questions for Boova?
Well, all right. You're one who, you understood where she was coming from and where she was headed with this conversation and,
yep.
and even why she brought it up. You're one who, you're following Jesus with all your heart, and you understand that her goal, her basic goal there was to get them in touch with Jesus in a way that actually saves and heals.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Did you sense any kind of, I mean, I don't mean to be judgmental or anything, but did you sense any kind of love from her for her target audience, as I'll call it?
That's a really good question. I don't think so. I think that she was loving on the people, and I think that she felt that she was portraying love, but I don't think anyone else did.
Okay.
So coming from, I know where she's coming from, and she's saying this, hopefully not just from a ritualistic standpoint of, oh, I need to invite more people to church, but from the standpoint of, you know, maybe these people don't know about Jesus Christ and they need to. It felt like she thought she was giving love, but from the standpoint of my friends, I knew they didn't feel that way.
Okay.
I think that they felt like they were just being, you know, kind of just pinpointed at 3 o'clock in the morning at a Perkins. Just kind of like, hey, what's your prayer life like? Well, you believe in Jesus? Well, if not, here, come to church.
Here's what I would feel like in that situation. Of course, I wasn't there, but judging by your description, I would feel like my drunk uncle just walked in.
Exactly.
Like, yep. I know the guy. I love the guy. You're embarrassing me.
Right.
That's what it would feel like to me. Like, because I've had this happen before where I've been talking about the kingdom of God with a couple fellas. I mean, over months, years. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We're making headway. We're getting there. We can at least have the conversations without eyes rolled and swearing. You know what I'm saying? We're making some gains.
Yeah.
And then they talk to some wingnut over the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm not credible along with the wingnut. You know what I'm saying? And I thought, why did you have to talk to that crazy man?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, hey, here's the deal. If I'm talking to God, and I submit myself to prayer, and it's time to put the gas down, I'll put the gas down, right? And so I feel like God blooms you where you're planted. He puts you around people that need to hear about his kingdom, and he gives you the ability and the insight. And like, I pray for this all the time, Lord, let me see what it is, not what I want it to be or what I think it is. Let me see it for what it is. And so then tell me what to do. Right. And so, like, if you're earnestly speaking that, I feel like when it's time to go a little bolder and start stepping into their life, I feel like he's going to tell you when that is.
Yeah,
it's time to do it. And then you find out that some nut job showed up and like waxed the whole thing. And it would really irritate me. I've had that happen to me a couple times. And I'm like, why did you have to open your mouth, crazy man? You don't even know these people.
She told me that that my aura was really glowing and was really bright.
Aura.
That don't sound right.
Right, exactly.
That don't sound right at all.
She was just like, you just got this kind of aura kind of deal, like the Holy Spirit's really there.
Secular Haiti.
Yeah, exactly. and that's exactly how I felt. Is I'm not looking for credibility with my friends. I'm really not. I don't think that's going to happen, to be 100% honest. I just want to be a light for them. And I want to be, you know, this is what it's like to have an honest faith with Christ. Like, you don't have to be that. You don't have to be creepy televangelist. You can have an honest faith and still not necessarily creep them out or be a normal person, but just not like completely throw them away. But the way this gal came at us, it was, it really felt like it was kind of a, what are you doing?
Well,
like, I get away.
Here's the deal. I think to Dave's point, truth on its own doesn't love. It just
right.
doesn't. Like,
yeah.
it is not a loving thing. Like, just because it's true doesn't mean it's love. However, you can love someone through truth. You know what I'm saying? Like, it can be true that I can say, hey, I'm concerned about where you're going to end up in eternity. I can say that. And generally, from a black and white perspective, I'd much rather see you go to heaven. But that does not mean that I love you. It does not mean that I care about you, really. It just means that I'm being obedient.
Right.
There is a difference. It's hard to introduce someone to the love of God doing it through a completely unloving means. Mm-hmm. Say, because the question would be, would she have the exact same conversation, whether it was you guys sitting there or not? If it was someone completely different that had no relevance to you whatsoever, that didn't betray the fact that she could see you, mm-hmm. would have been the exact same interaction. And that's why the tracts are not loving. That's why
right.
the pamphlets are no good.
Right.
Right? It doesn't you're completely devoid of God's character of love. Now, I'm not saying the truth should not be communicated. That's the nature of love. Like,
right.
you cannot have love without mm-hmm. speaking truth. But truth on its own is not love mm-hmm. and should not be treated as such. And I think that's the issue we run into, is you get this hardcore thought that, like, I will do this to as many people as I can. And so they start handing out the pamphlets, so they say the same thing. They use, maybe that's a bomb. If it was a bomb, would you go to heaven or hell? Like, oh, yeah, smooth.
Yep.
Yeah, you're a real, real smoothie.
That's what I'm thinking about 3 a.m. at the Perkins.
Total conversationalist.
I think this is one of the things that we miss, and I'm talking about Christians in general, Christ followers in general, is I don't think, and I agree, truth in itself is not loving. I think that we bombard people with facts. We bombard people with the, you know, God is real and here's why conversation. You know, the have you ever looked at a giraffe, blah, blah, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just, it's fighting something and trying to have an argument with someone where no argument is needed. You shouldn't be starting from a standpoint of, well, evolution can't exist because of this, and now you believe in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. No. You start from a relationship standpoint. I think you can go and talk to a stranger about God, and God can definitely work through that. And God can work through all circumstances. However, I think that blindly attacking somebody at 3 o'clock in the morning is not the right way to do it. I think that coming at someone and starting a relationship with them, getting to know who they are, serving them, and showing them the love of Christ is 1,000 times better and more effective than anything you're going to do with a Bible tract or anything you're going to do with a fact that you have that might dazzle someone for 2 seconds.
Here's the deal. I'm to my dying day, I'm going to wonder what that woman would have prayed about in the bathroom.
Right.
Like, she would have walked him through the sinner's prayer.
It's not a creed or relationship with God.
And it's basically just repeat after me sort of a thing. And
it's like a hostage situation.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
That is exactly how my friend felt.
Ritual hostage.
That is exactly how my friend felt.
Yeah.
She felt so uncomfortable because it went from, I've got a direct line connection with the God of this universe, and I would like for you to join with me in that and have a relationship with him. It went from that to, guess what? I've got some fancy words that you might like. That is pointless, that is meaningless, and that is cheapening the relationship you have with Christ.
Yeah.
Well, it's not even words that you'd like because they've not shown any right. interest in that.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard it explained one time that it's like showing up at somebody's doorstep with a gun and pointing at their head and saying, you're going to date me. You're going to date me or I'm going to shoot you in the head. That's your option. That's the, if you're going to die, you're going to go to heaven or hell. That's basically
yeah.
it. Yeah, sure, they might say yes. I mean, is that the fruit? Does that start bearing the fruit of a positive interaction? A growing relationship of love. Well, they will eventually love me, gun to head still. They'll come around, but at least I got them to go out with me because that's what really needed to happen.
Yeah,
that's the nature of our evangelism.
We're hoping
that's
for Florence Nightingale, right? We're hoping to get you under duress, and then after a while you just begin to, you know, find some affection there.
Yeah, yeah, because that's how persuasive the Lord is.
Let's cause Stockholm Syndrome in everyone.
All right, listen, an impersonal approach is no replacement for a personal relationship. And you need to be displaying your personal relationship that you have with God, the ways in which you are trusting in God. And that's what's on display is your faith. It is your faith. And so if you're talking about impersonal facts, I mean, that's good as long as it's supporting your faith, as long as they're seeing how it's lived out. I mean, that's really what's going to speak to people is how is this actually impacting your life?
Yeah.
And how is Jesus real in your life? I mean, we could debate evolution versus creation for I don't know how long, and that's not going to convict anyone. I mean, you can fully convinced someone that Jesus was raised from the dead, and you have established the facts of that. And so what?
Yeah.
You know, where does the rubber meet the road?
Yeah.
But even as I say all that, and we get this great example of, I guess, what not to do, what's really awesome is it's not about the messenger. It's about Jesus. It's about what he did. I mean, that's why, what's the verse? We hold these treasures in jars of clay. This faith that we have is Jesus. Ourselves, we're just very cheap clay vessels compared to that. And so we're imperfect messengers, no matter what. I mean, we're going to make mistakes. But ultimately, it's Jesus who is perfect, not us. So.
Yeah, Boova.
Yeah.
Why didn't you hug the woman?
That does bring an interesting point, though, because, like, you know, they very well could have seen their position as a modern-day Paul. You know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
Like, we like to see a lot of a personal relationship, and maybe that's Western culture a little bit. I agree that tends to be more genuine, more authentic, mm-hmm. when people can ask the question, okay, even if all this is true, how does that affect your life, right? And if I can answer that honestly, that makes it a lot more true and a lot more authentic, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I mean, you read most of the Pauline epistles, I mean, which... He's pretty bold. He's out there rocking it. Now, is that something that just God has called Paul and people like him or her to do and has set us afire for lovey-dovey relationship building?
Here's the deal. But look where he's talking, right? Even when he's engaging with large group of people, he's doing it in a form in which people are there to be engaged, right? Mm-hmm. He's in temples. Mm-hmm. Even when he's interacting, like on Mars Hill, there's people of the day standing around debating. Like that's he just got in on the conversation. Mm-hmm. What he didn't do, he didn't go door to door and like start popping his head in the thatch and saying, "Hey, guess what? Give me your Artemis. I want to speak."
Right.
You know. And so like his letters of encouragement are letters to churches. I guess what I'm saying is that when he speaks, it has some relevance to what's going on around him. Mm-hmm. What you don't see is Paul on the soapbox, and that a lot of times like the guys that are doing the soapbox stuff. They're looking at Paul like on Mars Hill as if he just sat up there and just decided to start a rant. But like those guys, I mean, they're debating mm-hmm. like the thoughts of the day. He just got in on the conversation. Mm-hmm. And so like there's a relevance to being part of that. You have people that are already impassioned to be talking about stuff like that. And he's jumping in and he's not even like he's not necessarily he's not fighting with an agenda. He's in on a conversation mm-hmm. and that information is relevant to him because he's a follower of Christ.
Yeah. But it's also it's a cultural norm for him. I mean, that's how they passed information is they would
yeah.
go into the city center and they would broadcast it as loudly as they could and just announce it. And then, you know, it gets around.
Yeah.
And if someone wants to respond to that, then they're free to respond. And they live in that's just the culture that he's in.
Yeah.
So he's following more established cultural norms of how you would broadcast information.
Yeah.
So how would we do that in our culture? I guess we get on a radio or something.
Facebook.
You listen to Live from the Path. But boy, wild stuff goes. I want to go to the Perkins at 3 a.m. I don't remember getting a phone call said, "Hey, we're going for cakes, Ben."
Here's the deal. If I thought Perkins could deliver my breakfast within an hour and a half, I'd probably go.
I can call this lady.
They're opening a Perkins in the Altoona. Just something to think about.
We'll talk about that. Maybe we'll see if she'll come on.
Okay.
Here we go. Ready?
Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
Dear Live from the Path, my father passed away recently. Flowers and plants were sent to the funeral home. After the funeral mass, the flowers were sent to the cemetery for the graveside services. Afterward, I was asked to go to the funeral home to pick them up. When I arrived, I saw my sister-in-law taking the plant her employer had sent into her car. She said it was her plant. The next day, my other sister-in-law went to my mother's house to retrieve the plant her company had sent. Life from the Path, I have never heard of this. I thought because the flowers and plants had been sent to my mother, it should be up to her to decide whether or not she wants to distribute them. After all, she's the one suffering of the greatest loss. What is the proper procedure for plants to be distributed after a funeral? What do you think, boys? Plant distribution.
I can't imagine the thing on a widow's mind is where the plants go.
Yeah, where's the plant for my daughter's employer?
It's a nice gesture. It's great to be there, and it's nice that you sent it, but to be 100% honest, no one cares where it's divvied up. The people who care where it's divvied up is the people who sent them.
Yeah. Dear Life from the Path, I'm petty and small. What should I do?
Yeah. It's your mother. Let her deal with it. If she decides to get up on the soapbox and say, "Hey, those flowers were for blah, 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 I want them back," fine.
I do find
it odd. Leave
it
alone.
I do find it odd that they would retrieve them.
It is
I
odd.
I find it to be socially odd that you would do that. I mean, people sent flowers. They're not to be re-gifted from the funeral. But I guess I don't even...
So their dad, it was from their dad's funeral, right? I mean, it's not like it's... Their mother is not the only impact to the death. It's not like all flowers upon my decease are for my wife.
I think daughter is upset because it's in-laws, sister-in-laws, brothers' wives that are taking the plants.
There were more flowers there because their work provided some. I don't have a problem with this at all.
Yeah, there's no issue.
It seems very odd to be upset about it.
I'm sorry. You're making... yeah, exactly. You're making an issue out of nothing.
Secular says... the plants should be shared. Your mother is not the only person who is grieving. Your sister's
way to align with secular.
Your sisters-in-law are married to the sons of the deceased, so they should have the plants their employer sent to the funeral. I still find that to be a weird hard line to draw. I feel like it's a free-for-all. Yeah. Every plant for himself.
Hey, you want a plant?
Well, when there are more flowers and plants than the family can enjoy, people often have them delivered to nursing homes or homes for the elderly or disabled, where they can lend a burst of color and good cheer. P.S. Thank yous to the sender should be sent by your sisters-in-law for the plants that they took.
Oh, really?
That's interesting.
I didn't see that coming. That's like a whole twist of the neck right there.
Huh.
Because, I mean, that's a straight-out admittance that I stole the flowers.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Why are you sending us a thank you, Patty?
Would you feel shafted if you're the flower provider? That you got it from the in-law?
No.
I don't know about that.
What, are you expecting a card from the deceased?
I would expect nothing at all.
Okay.
The widow, maybe.
This doesn't have any legs. Ready? No, dear life from the path. Students object to being quizzed on his grades. Dear life from the path, I know it's rude to ask workers how much money they make, but does that also apply to asking a student what his or her grades are? Aside from parents and teachers, I don't think it's anybody's business how I'm doing academically. In my opinion, asking, how are your grades, is as rude as asking, how much money do you make? What are your thoughts on that?
I think they're both irrelevant.
I ask people how much money they make all the time. I don't give a rip. I do it all the time.
I think it's foolish to measure someone by that standard.
I'm interested. If we're going to lunch, you make $150,000 a year, I want you to pick it up. That's what I want. Yeah. What's the deal?
So I suppose that people are asking that just to make conversation, right? They don't know what to say.
Yeah, they don't know anything.
How are you doing at school?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking, in school, they might be looking to see, did we all collectively do really poorly on the test, or did we all do really...
quiz. But... Steve did well. Boo.
There's
always one guy that rocked it.
I got the vibe that it was like a family friend saying, hey, man, how are you doing in school?
I imagine more misery loves company.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a problem with it anyway. Share. Hey, I'd rather not say.
Here's the deal.
Get better grades so you don't have to worry about this. If you're getting A's, you're totally saying, I'm getting A's.
He's getting awesome grades. He just doesn't want to be harassed about it.
Yeah. Whatever. He might be the one breaking the curve, and he doesn't want everyone to know that.
That happened to me all the time.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, it did.
No, it didn't.
People were like, hey, blah, 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 that test was brutal. And I'd be like, that's all right, I think. You got to throw a little, maybe it wasn't in there.
Yeah.
But the truth is, I rocked it. That's what happened. That's how you got to live humbly. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to be like, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you could talk about it.
30 years later? Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I was very humble about my grades in high school.
Here's the deal. Like, you can't tell a lie like you failed it. Like, they're going to say, hey, that test was terrible. I think everybody did terrible. And so you can sit there and not say anything and look very suspicious. You say, I think I did okay. I don't know. That's it. That way you put a little doubt in there, but you told the truth. I think that's the way to live right there. You humbly said, I don't know, I think everybody failed it. And then you didn't tell a lie. I think that's how you do it.
I don't have a problem with it.
I think it's fine.
I mean, here's the deal. It's like, what is he looking for advice from? People are going to ask questions whether you want to or not.
Right.
We have this all the time. We at work, they always prepare like a certain set of questions.
How much money do you make, Ben?
I make big money.
Yeah, I knew it.
Big money.
I swim in it.
We're going to Burger King.
Corporations are always doing this. They produce a certain set of question and answers, right? Mm-hmm. And they say, stick to these. Mm-hmm. Like, well, what if a guy asks a question that's not on your sheet? Just because you don't like it doesn't mean that people aren't going to ask you the question. So you're just going to have to learn to deal with it. I mean, you can't just turn and walk away and act like, well, hey, how'd you do? How are you doing in school? Well, I'm going to get a Snickers.
Yeah.
I'm going to head to the Snickers.
I'm out.
Snickers
area. I got
to
take a potty break.
I mean, just answer the question. I'd rather not say, or I do pretty well. Thanks, man.
Yeah, I do all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Let's figure out something to say. It's irrelevant whether it's good tact or not. People are going to ask it.
Yeah. Secular says, I'm with you. How about coming back with, I'll forgive you for asking if you'll forgive me for not answering? Yeah, that's going to that's gonna calm the waters.
Seem passive aggressive
and then go,
at all.
Zigga! And then run away.
Anyone says that to me, I'm hitting that jerk. Man, like, hey, man, I asked you a simple question. Don't give me a snarky answer.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's way snide. Yeah, I don't think so. Oh,
I'll forgive you for asking me that question if you forgive me for not answering.
You must have done so well because you're so clever with your response.
Yeah, exactly. There's no way that guy got bad grades. Did you hear that response? That was awesome.
I mean, he's got a golden tongue.
Seriously.
Man, I got
I was
school is hard enough without that dribble-drabble. I like to tell people to get out of school directly, but it's wrong for their future careers. I'm just saying, it's rough times.
What?
What do you mean?
Whatever. They're not rough times. It's high school.
Yeah, it ruins people.
It does not.
Ben?
It does ruin people.
No, it doesn't.
It shouldn't. It shouldn't ruin people.
Ridiculous.
Hey, now listen here, Buva. Just because you didn't seem to struggle with it, if perhaps you didn't, doesn't mean that other people don't. It's a reality for them, whether it's a reality for you. Some people thrive in those situations. Some people get crushed by them. That's who they are. It ruins people. They carry stigmas from those years on. Now, they shouldn't. I'm not saying they should. It's not healthy.
That's fair.
But it certainly happens.
I will agree with that. Yes, it does happen.
That's the big parameter under which they all live. And it sometimes is a crushing parameter.
Okay.
I'll now tell me your grades.
I did awful in high school.
How did you do?
Okay.
I don't even remember my GPA. It was so low.
Dear Life from the Path. Last one. I come from a troubled family. I'm just now realizing that there's more to life than posting bond for family members and getting people out of jail at 3 a.m. I got my GED and started college this year. Although I try to keep them at bay, they call me with one family crisis or another, and it's putting stress on everyone around me. I'd love to have a positive relationship with my family, but drama seems to follow them everywhere. Should I just let them go and move on with my life or continue doing the same as always? Must I drop everything I'm doing to jump and run every time the phone rings? Ooh. There's a lot going on in that one.
Yeah.
You need boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to set them and you got to stick to them, and they're going to be tough.
So give me some examples. Like, what type of boundaries?
Like, shut off the phone after certain hours. And if they got themselves into prison or, I guess, jail for the night, let them sleep it off.
Yeah.
You know, you can come post them, bail them out tomorrow.
Family emergencies are going to happen. I mean, that drama is going to happen in a family. That's bound to happen. Mm-hmm. Your reaction is completely what you control. I think that you need to, you can't eliminate your family and you can't just run away from them entirely. But that doesn't mean you have to be an enabler to make sure that they have a safety net every time something bad happens. Mm-hmm. That's not your job.
Actually, so the safety net is causes a perpetual issue. I think Dave's right. You have to draw boundaries, and you don't have to like sit down and have a family meeting and say, okay, fellas, these are my boundaries from now on. You just have to personally know what your boundaries are. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if they call asking for money, you don't have money, the answer is no, you can't have any money. You know what I'm saying? If they put themselves in jail because they was drinking and got busted, that's where they're going to stay. Mm-hmm. And you got to be able to say that, and you got to be okay with that, and you got to not let it drag you down. Because I know there's families out there that there's bits and pockets in that family that you think you're trying to help them, and really what they're doing is dragging you with them. And you're not, and you let that keep on, you will no longer be in a position to help them do anything. And frankly, in a more spiritual sense, if you spend all your time concerned with someone who refuses to fall into the kingdom of God and accept relationship with Christ, and they spend all their time rebelling, and you spend all your time worrying about that fact, then you have basically taken yourself out of the game as a witness or a disciple to anyone else. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, people like to paint the devil as some kind of comic book man that comes up with weird ways to flatten your tire on the way to the mission field. But, you know, he'll take sole advantage of the fact that one of your family members is lost and not accepting Christ, and will continually steer you right back in it where you are not talking to anyone else about the kingdom because of that one person. That is a win for him and not a win for anybody else. And so, like, that's the stuff that I think is probably more of the issue. You know, the money and the time and that stuff, it's important. But it goes back to that number one thing is God will help you discern these things out. Prayer will help you discern these out, and some good counsel. You know what I'm saying? Like, you stick your nose in your Bible, you get yourself some good biblical people around you that you can run some situations by that aren't gossips, and you'll flesh it out. You'll figure out where the lines need to be, and hold fast to them. Don't let them go, because you'll want to. You'll want to dump them. You'll want to go pick up your mom from jail again. You just want to. You love them, and that's not going to leave. But going down, being taken down with them is not beneficial for you.
Well, so how do you, in the context of what you're saying, looking at something like a 1 Timothy 5:8 where it says, but if anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for members of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. How do we understand a verse like that in the terms of what it is that you're talking about?
Well, I think it's very much that provisions were made and they chose to either squander them or not take them.
Yeah, I was going to say, providing for your family does not necessarily mean that you're there at every single moment getting them out of everything. I think that that is a wrong assumption. I think that sometimes providing for them is allowing them to deal with the consequences that they have gotten themselves into.
Why?
Because they need... The consequences are there for a reason. Something has happened. They're paying for that. You do not have to be their knight in shining armor at all points in time for you to be giving them provisions and to be taking care of them and to be family for them. Part of being family is loving them. And sometimes loving does not necessarily mean getting them out of everything.
Okay. I don't know that verse backs that up with what you just said, though. Like, I mean, I think Ben's overall point was is that how do you tackle a problem with this from a biblical perspective? Like, it's not like I don't agree with what you're saying, but I feel like you don't have a ton of biblical backup from what you're
like,
saying.
Like,
let's say you've got someone who is on a downward spiral. They just haven't hit rock bottom yet. And if you're just there enabling them, slowing them down, allowing them just to continue indulging in whatever the thing is that they're doing, you're not helping them. On the other hand, there are things that you can do to help them once they hit rock bottom and they're actually ready for recovery in some form or another. But you've got to actually be wise about what you're doing. So the way that you interact with the person, even though it may seem very loving and very helpful, it could actually be the exact opposite because, you know, just wisdom is not there.
It's just it's a fickle seesaw, man, because mm-hmm. The time will come where you're exacting punishments of your own. Like, the punishment is, I'm not coming because you didn't learn your lesson and you're not getting any better.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's the time that you were supposed to extend a hand and a heart and say, okay, you need some respite, you need some peace,
mm-hmm.
you need some influence apart from the influence that you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the time. And that goes back to the number one thing of letting God flush that out. Mm-hmm. Like, that's some stuff that I would, I mean, there's been situations where that has been exactly what has happened. It takes a lot of prayer to make sure that you're not exacting God's justice or God's heart into helping them change their ways, and you're fitting into the way that God needs it to be done.
You can't step in and be the savior. That only Jesus can do that.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like there's times when let's say for example that you know your sister's gotten popped for possession five times, right? Mm-hmm. And the sixth time she calls,
mm-hmm.
like your instinct is, I love my sister. I want to go pick her up. I don't want her hanging around those creepy dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we got to go get her. The other flip side of that coin is like, she, you know, how many times am I going to bail her out of this? She's never going to learn her lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Both are valid arguments, mm-hmm. and both could be true in either way, mm-hmm. right? It just depends on what that situation merits. And I frankly, I struggle with ones to pick some of the time. I don't know. You know, sometimes I think, you know, they just need to be out of what they're in, be around some influences that aren't the ones that they have, and maybe they'll see Christ in it. And then on the other hand, it's like, you know, maybe they're not even willing to open their eyes to it until they've had everything taken away.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. God knows the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that I think it's very much a prayer, a prayer and Bible thing.
Yeah, I mean, the cutting off for rock bottom seems pretty difficult, because what you're saying is like, absence of an influence of someone who loves Jesus, good luck. Tell me when you're sick of it.
No, I'm not saying remove yourself entirely from the situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, keep communication open so that you know when they do hit rock bottom that you can actually be there. But be aware enough of what's going on and what you're actually doing. I mean, if you're just handing them money, you know what they're going to end up turning around and doing with that money. So, keep close communication, but be wise about how you do it.
Yeah, I mean, and I think what you run into is they're often not that distinct, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you got someone who's a ne'er-do-well in your family, they're not likely to come and ask you for money to buy drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But they might say, hey, can I stay at your place for a night? Mm-hmm. And they're not going to do drugs while they're there. They just simply want to stay at your place. Mm-hmm. Are you contributing? Or are you helping? I mean, they'll figure out limits eventually. The question is like, what are you doing? I don't know. I think that's a tough role.
This is one of these things where people say, how does all those facts you just explained to me, how does Jesus actually interact in your life? This is one of the things. This is one of the things that I have to pray about, because I make snap judgments on the wrong every time. Every time I think it's time for them to sit and wallow in it, it turns out getting worse. Every time I think it's time to extend the hand to get them out, I just enable them to do it again. And so, like, it's a very tough decision, and it's hard to look at it with wisdom, because it gets clouded emotionally. It just does.
Yeah.
And so it really is a Jesus thing, and you know, and I he'll answer you. I know he will.
What's the secular advice?
Secular says, every time you come to the rescue, you further enable your relatives to do whatever it is that has gotten them in hot water. That you have managed to separate yourself to the extent you have and achieve to the level you have reached is admirable. But if you're going to continue to accomplish your goals, you cannot allow your family to distract you from your studies. Set limits, let them know when you can't be disturbed, and turn your phone off. They'll survive and you'll thrive.
You've been listening to Life from the Path, coming at you every Monday night here at 10 to roughly 11:20 Central Time at livefromthepath.org. Also Saturdays at 7 p.m. on 99.3 KTA. Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you have any questions or comments for us, you can always get a hold of us during the week at info@livefromthepath.org or check out the website livefromthepath.org for past clips. Artists that have been on, plenty of cool musical content, including some from Jess Anderson, who I'm going to send you out with. Her new album, Hole, was out 2 weeks ago. Go to jessanderson.com and you can pick it up. Thank you for listening to Live from the Path.